You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Guys and gals, welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. I'm Vic Moss, and we have with us
Kenji Sugihara.
And this is going to be an incredibly awesome episode. We're going to be talking about remote ID and how it's going to drive the industry forward. So we're just going to get right into it, and I'm going to just kind of give some questions to Kenji and let him go. So Kenji, do me a favor and explain how remote ID came about and how the ARC really kind of ended up diving into it as deep as they did.
Okay, what really happened was the Registration Aviation Rulemaking Committee, which is the ARC, discovered that there was a registration, but there's no way to identify drones in the air. And with that, the FAA said, hey, we're going to need to go into looking into like remote identification and tracking of drones.
Okay, so then from that, the ARC, this particular ARC was a very large ARC. How many? We had 75 people on there, roughly?
Yeah, we had around 75 people.
And so what's a typical ARC size?
Around 20 or 30. Yeah, so
I think that's what I've heard. Pretty big. So I think that really shows how important the FAA really thought that the remote ID part of UAS activities are. And really to the point where if we really can't move that much further ahead than where we are right now without a remote ID system, because that's what all the rest of the, stuff over people, beyond visual line of sight, those particular type of operations are going to have to be built, and the rules for those operations are going to have to be built on some type of way to identify that drone that's going to be out 2 or 3 or 4 miles away from an operator, or that drone that's flying over a crowd at a parade. You know, is that drone a friendly or a foe? So I think getting, the importance of remote ID is something I think that might be lost on a lot of people. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think coming from the perspective of the public, for public acceptance, we really have to realize that remote ID is the foundation, and it's going to help with acceptance, because there's a citizen on the street who sees a drone that's bugging them. Right now, there's no accountability, because by the time law enforcement shows up, the operator and the drone's long gone. But if they're able to get the remote ID or the license plate, they'll be able to say, Mr. or Mrs. Police Officer, here's this information. And then the police officer could look at that information and say, oh, they were completely legitimate. They weren't doing anything wrong. And here's some educational information. Or in the case that where there was something wrong being done, then there's that accountability piece. And I think that's the biggest fear right now, not only from the public, but also a lot of legislators.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the public itself is being a little more accepting, or maybe in some cases a lot more accepting than just a couple of years ago, really. So if we can get the public to even be more accepting than they are already, then we can move forward with even more things like over people. And you see a lot in the forums, a lot in the industry, a lot in the community itself, in the U.S. and the drone community, a pretty staunch reluctance by a number of pretty important people. And I think it's probably safe to assume that remote ID is a done deal.
Yeah, I'd say it is a done deal. There's too much momentum behind it. There's a lot of industry that's behind it, and also a lot of government and security agencies behind it, along with a sort of state-level entities that are very interested in seeing that technology go forward.
And it's even in the, what was the FAA Extension Act? The 2016 Extension Act, mm-hmm. in a particular section. And although that was only an extension, some of the parts of that extension did have consequences involved, and that's one of them. It's in the FAA and the government in general is smart enough to approach it to where you need the technology and you need the ability before you pass the rules. Mm-hmm. I just finished listening to Brendan's talk here at Expo, and he mentioned something which I hadn't heard before, which I thought was kind of funny, and not something I wouldn't put it past the FAA to do, in that Italy and Denmark already have remote ID laws. But nobody's compliant because the technology doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So they passed the law before they passed any way to be compliant with the law. And I think the FAA, the FAA is probably smart enough not to do that, mm-hmm. but it's a possibility that our government might do something like that. So it's nice that the FAA is getting out in front of it.
So quick thing for you, too. We mentioned the size of the ARC, which was around 75 or maybe a little bit more. And the reason why was it was actually broken into three different subgroups. So it was almost like three different ARCs in itself. So I was on sort of the first work group, which dealt with the technology. And we looked at a lot of technological solutions and came up some recommendations and actually came up with a matrix of what can do what. Mm-hmm. So we offered a menu of options to the other work groups, too. The second work group had to deal with law enforcement. So that's where you had your Homeland Security, you had your FBI, you had state and local law enforcement. So that was pretty varied. And then the third work group really dealt with the implementation phase. What was the roadmap to get that to the final goal of actually having that deployment? So we had those three ARCs that generated a final report, and then the entire ARC got together and debated and came up with the final report, which was released late last year.
Okay, cool. And now there was a general consensus that of everybody who, you know, that most of it was agreed upon. Is that right?
Yeah, okay. Most of it was agreed upon. There was a last minute sort of controversy that was, I'd say it was almost, I wouldn't call it artificial, but it was, there was this misconception that hobbyists would be completely sort of left out of the remote ID and tracking requirement. And that was never, I think, the intention of most of the members of the rulemaking committee, because there was consensus. But the argument came over what sort of threshold would be used. Would it be a weight-based threshold, like 250 grams or below would be subject to the remote ID and tracking requirements, or would it be capabilities-based? And law enforcement said, hey, if it can fly beyond visual line of sight, had a sensor, it can sort of auto-navigate between a number of points, then it should be subject to remote ID and tracking.
Okay.
So that is where that conflict came into play, and that's where you start to see sort of opinions put out there.
Some people feel that those opinions were put out, and I don't want to, you know, kind of leaked to the press, just to use a common vernacular, mm-hmm. To cause dissension. And to undermine what the ARC was doing?
I can't go into the motivation, but it did cause some discomfort. But if you look at the larger part of the body of work that we produced, mm-hmm. there was consensus.
Yes.
So, yes. And we came up with some fantastic ideas. So I think you need to look at 95% of the product that we put out where there was agreement and say, hey, this really worked.
If you get a group of private individuals together to work for a government solution, and you get a 95% agreement, I consider that pretty darn good.
Yeah. Although one thing I do think that ARC did not have enough of was sort of representatives of the user groups. AMA was on there. They did a great job. Rich was there. But in terms of 107 operators, like you and I, who are out there flying all the time, I think we needed to have a larger voice because we were the ones who were actually subject to it. But when I did bring this up, it was like, this is really law enforcement focused rulemaking committee. But I did make that objection, said, hey, okay, we need a little bit more representation.
Well, that was great because that's true. And I think there's a lot of, and not just in this particular aspect of the rulemaking that's happening now, will be happening for a while and has happened in the past. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of 107 operators feel like we do not have a voice.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to have you there. I was very excited when I found out you were on there. So thank you very much for that. What were some of the challenges on, you were on the technological side of things, correct?
Yes.
So what were some of the challenges that you had to address and then basically fix? I mean,
So fundamentally, we looked at a number of technologies, sort of like RF, which includes your Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. We also looked at ADS-B. We looked at the Ford solution, which was the lights flashing to do that identification.
Yeah, I heard that today. That was pretty interesting.
Which is pretty cool in itself. We also looked at LTE. We looked at other sources of RF like DJI's Aeroscope, their, mm-hmm. their sort of technology solution, the C2-Link. We just offered a what their capabilities were. So I don't think we came up with a specific recommendation, but we gave a menu, what would fit in certain scenarios, mm-hmm. because one of the the architecture that we came up with, and this is thanks to Intel, they were very helpful in this conversation, was sort of context appropriate remote ID and tracking. So the idea is for the lowest class, it's like very basic. You don't need that much information. But as you increase in complexity or the more dangerous operations or larger operations, you need a different set of remote ID and tracking.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, because it's... And from what I've understood is you guys never came up with a perfect solution, because it doesn't exist.
No.
So you gave them that menu of hey, these are the options we've come up with, and you scored, you kind of did a matrix of scoring.
Correct.
And you say, okay, this is probably the best one, this is probably the least effective one. But in all likelihood, is it going to be one that is a combination of one or a combination of two or three different aspects of it, maybe?
Well, that's still up in the air, because the rulemaking will have to happen. The big fight I wouldn't call it a fight. It was more of a disagreement. Mm-hmm. It was a cordial disagreement that did get heated at times. Was there was a conversation about whether there needed to be constant and pervasive tracking of all drones. And for me, as a pilot, that remote pilot, that makes me a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a lot of people uncomfortable too.
It definitely makes people uncomfortable, but it's also impractical.
Yeah. Yeah. It's impractical, especially when you're in very rural locations, like you fly in Colorado, you're in places where there's no signal.
Right.
And we don't want to get into a situation where a network connection is required to fly, because that would be horrible for us on the West Coast and the Midwest, mm-hmm. where we don't have that cellular coverage or network coverage.
And what would it do to search and rescue? I mean, a lot of search and rescues, you know, west of here, mm-hmm. they're in the mountains.
Yeah.
That's pretty much where they're all going, and we don't have cell service everywhere. We have it a lot of places in the mountains. You'd be surprised.
And I love to fly in the mountains too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, flying around at 9,000 feet is a little different than flying around at the sea level or a mile high here in Denver. What are some of the concerns that were either raised by members of the ARC or stuff that you've heard in different communities, different threads online from pilots, from remote pilots, and not just pilots, but operators as well?
Well, there are definitely different camps. For example, there are those people who never, ever want to have any sort of remote ID and tracking. And then there's those people who say, okay, it's fine. As long as it's easy, it doesn't bug me. I don't have to deal with stuff. And then there's uniquely some folks like me who are like, okay, we have this remote ID and tracking. What do we get in return?
Right.
Does that mean we can fly higher than 400 feet? Are there some special permissions that we can get? So this might be a key to doing all that cool stuff. And what's interesting too is the remote ID and tracking is sort of a foundation for the unmanned traffic management system.
Right, right.
Which is another like an entire show.
We'll get somebody from UTM on there. Get somebody from NASA.
Yeah, but I just want to rotate back to sort of that conversation we were having about that conflict.
Sure.
There was two different types of technology. One was broadcast only. So it's like, think about it this way. You got a little radio on your drone, and it just pings out and says, I'm here. And it's very localized, and it doesn't go all over the place. And that's what we said would work for very basic broadcast only. Mm-hmm. And then on the next level up was networked. So that would require a connection to the network, either via cellular or satellite. So that was next level up.
Okay.
And that was big conversation we were having in terms of how we describe that technology.
Okay, something just occurred to me. Mm-hmm. If it's required to have a network to fly.
Yeah.
So, and you're in search and rescue mission in the mountains, you and I flying just for the heck of it in the mountains, mm-hmm. or out in the eastern plains of Colorado, the desert of Arizona, wherever, where there's no coverage. If there was the capability of a storage mechanism on the bird, and then next time it came and you flew it with cell service somewhere or Wi-Fi service or whatever, and then it uploaded all that data, would that satisfy the ones who would want to have network capabilities at all times, you think?
I don't think so. They want real time.
They want real time. That's tracking. What I was wondering. Yeah. That's what I was wondering.
Especially as security folks. That's one of their main things.
Well, I think security would make sense. And I think what would be, you know, one of the things I think with security is that the security issues are going to happen in urban corridors for the most part.
Yeah.
I think. So that I can see where something like that, where a dual system would go. One of the biggest problems with acceptance is compliance.
Yes.
And so what are some of the objections as far as compliance? What are some of the barriers to compliance? Let's put it that way, that came up at the DAC or even just since.
ARC, not DAC. ARC, I wish I was on the DAC.
Sorry,
that would be really nice.
Too many FAA and their acronyms.
Some of the objections is the friction. If you think about it, we thought that people wouldn't want to go on Amazon to buy their little doohickey and stick it on their drone every time they go fly. We thought about, for example, having to have a separate cell service for your drone or whatever. So then there's that objections like the fundamentally, do I want to be tracked?
Right.
So those are like three of the primary that we thought in terms of friction. In terms of implementation, eventually it'll be baked into most systems.
Right.
And it'll be part of what you have. And that's where that method of compliance, as long as it's easy and it's
easy and cheap.
Yeah. Easy and cheap.
Cheap and easy. now then, because if this comes to fruition in some type of manner that needs real time or even, you know, downloadable, that's probably not going to work, but something where you've got to have to be able to track this at some point in its life, the cost and the ease of use is going to work, but the privacy matters. A lot of remote pilots and a lot of just people in general are really worried about the privacy issue. You've brought it up a couple of times. Right. Myself, I'm not as big of an issue with privacy. I'm kind of in the if you're not doing something wrong, don't worry about it camp. But I also know that I'm a small minority of people that way. That's just it's how I am. That like it or love it, but like it or hate it, I should say. But what about the data? Where does the data go? Who stores the data? Who has access to the data? How secure is the data? I mean, we've had the IRS hacked. We've had NSA hacked. How much effort do you think a government agency could or would put into protecting our information?
Well, let me start out by this, because I'm going to give credit where credit is due. Mm-hmm. And the FAA came out and said, hey, you know, the remote ID and tracking stuff that goes out won't have personally identifiable information like your name, address. It's just going to be a license plate number.
Right.
And that was absolutely critical, because what they want to prevent is sort of that vigilante going out, knocking on your door. Hey, Mr. Moss, I saw you flying your drone over my daughter.
Sure.
Lounging around by the swimming pool.
I would not do that, by the way. I actually have a great neighborhood. They know who's flying, and it's usually me.
They probably laugh at you.
No, yeah, they would.
Yeah, yeah. But fundamentally, that's a very important piece, that there's a separation between personal identifiable information and the digital license plate, so to speak. Okay. There was some discussion about sort of data security, where it would reside, but we really didn't get into that in depth, and I think that will come out of sort of the rulemaking discussions.
Okay, then one of the things you mentioned is like if somebody's flying above and by the time the cops show up, they're not there. But if you had the technology to identify who the drone, or at least the serial number of the drone, probably the controller, and then you could give that to the police. To me, how is a homeowner, property owner, whatever, going to be able to get that technology? I mean, is this going to be, you know, like the here in Colorado or here in Denver, we have they're called shot sites or something, but they have listening devices where if there's a gunshot somewhere on the not so great part of town, they can triangulate.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a necessity where all these urban corridors are going to have these tracking type systems? Or
now, basically, especially on the RF side, the idea was to keep it cheap and easy for the technology is accessible to everybody. And one of the biggest concerns about from law enforcement was cost.
Right.
Because when you have very, very small sort of police stations out there, they don't have a huge budget.
Right.
They can't be going out and buying all these big, huge boxes to track drones and all that stuff, and they have them on every police car.
Right, right.
So the idea was just to be able to use your cell phone and go, hey, who is that? And go, blink.
Okay, so you're talking like app-based kind of dealio. And
yeah, would, app-based.
Would like the private person be able to...
That's the idea.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting because that's not something I thought of before until the discussion this afternoon. Mm-hmm. The license plate on a vehicle is used almost all the time. You use it a couple times as a good comparison where, hey, you see somebody doing something wrong, you take down their license plate. Well, license plate's visible. Mm-hmm. You can see that. But you can't just go on the computer and look up license plate and say, oh, that is my neighbor down the street and he's driving down the road like an idiot and I'm going to go slash his tires or whatever. And so if Joanna, homeowner, has this on her phone mm-hmm. and somebody is flying over their daughter in the backyard, then she'll just say, okay, well, this is the remote ID. They show it to the responding police officer. Mm-hmm. But what about if I had a neighbor that didn't like me flying? And I can legally, unless the ULC has their way. In the
don't
neighborhood.
Don't go there.
And, you know, flying around my neighborhood, and then they say, oh, that's XX by, you know, XX7327, and then they can find out who that is, then they can come to me. So that is another privacy issue.
Yes, that's an absolute privacy issue, and that's where only authorized individuals will be able to sort of cross-reference that the license plate and sort of the personally identifiable information. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've advocated for is sort of how we have it currently in federal statute in terms of motor vehicle driver privacy, because mm-hmm. there are some statutes there that protect that information, and it can only be accessed by law enforcement or anticipation of litigation. And then there's a couple other types of entities that can access that data. So that data should be protected.
Okay. Well, but a court would have to get involved in one way or another, whether it's through, you know, law enforcement or through, through a judicial system.
Not necessarily a court, because a police officer...
Well, okay, true. Something in the judicial arena,
whether it's responding
or court or something along those lines. But yeah, you're right. You know, being succinct mm-hmm. Is good. So the DAC was slightly unbalanced. Park was slightly unbalanced. Sorry.
You need a beer.
No, I don't. yet. But it still came out okay. You know, I think the 107 and the 101 people will be accepting most of them because it's done. You can't fight it. You know, you can't undo it.
Well, remember, we still do have to go through rulemaking.
Right. You do it. The NPRM has not been done yet.
Yes.
Although you're called the rule committee, mm-hmm. all you're doing is suggesting.
Yes. We gave some.
Say, here, mom and dad, this is what I think we need to do.
Yep.
Okay. And then, so you will still have, once this becomes all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, and it becomes a workable situation in the eyes of the FAA or whoever else has to, you know, get their, put their 2 cents, DHS, FBI, all those people. It's going to be put out to an NPRM, a notice for proposed rulemaking. And we will have all as a community, as a industry, and even as the general public, it doesn't have anything to do with people who have drones, but they'll have the opportunity to comment on that officially.
Correct.
And the FAA by law has to read all those comments and take them into consideration.
Yeah.
So it's not, although it's a done deal, the final product is not
final
a done
product
deal.
Is not a done deal. I'm very curious to see what sort of structure that the NPRM will actually take and the recommendations. If I had a crystal ball, what I would say is that at a basic level, all drones will have to have some sort of broadcast mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about the big ones flying way, 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 way up high, but the ones below 400 feet and close to the earth. So that'll be a fundamental requirement for everybody, subject to whatever, if it, under 250 or whatever. But then on top of that is you'll probably be required to connect to a network
mm-hmm.
and when it's available. So for example, if you have AT&T and the coverage stinks, you don't have to get a Verizon
have
SIM,
AT&T.
A Verizon SIM or anything like that. But thinking about it, there will be multiple methods of compliance on the network side.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have an LTE chip in your drone itself, which I don't think most people will want
that. Yeah, I don't think most people would want that because there's a data issue.
And then on the ground, in your ground control station, in most cases, a lot of us use our phones or tablets mm-hmm. that are already mm-hmm. connected and it'll connect through that. Or what could happen is a broadcast from your drone to your phone, and your phone just pops it out.
Pops it out.
Into the network.
But we're not talking like a lot of data rate, though, a lot of data usage. No. So you could do it on 3G.
Yeah.
Maybe not one bar of 3G in the middle of New Mexico somewhere. Yeah. But to wrap this up just a little bit here, you guys have proposed this. It's like, okay, here's your report. All 75 members signed it. Nobody didn't sign it, right?
There were some dissensions, of course.
Oh, there were some dissensions. Published dissensions?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There's a published list.
Oh, that's right. It's on the backside or on the end of it.
Yep.
So then what are we looking at? Do you have any idea about a timeline of when we can expect an NPRM to come out?
Nobody knows at this point. We're waiting ourselves. We're really interested to see what happens.
And you did this. You turned it in no. November last year? When was it given to the FAA?
Sometime last year.
Last quarter of last year.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. I think this hopefully will shed some light on a very, very confusing but very important part of what's coming down the pipeline in the UAS industry, in the UAS community via the FAA. Remote ID, it's done. It's in the rules. It's going to happen.
Not in the rules yet.
No. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. It's not in the rules, but it's been it's been suggested strongly. It says, okay, this has to happen at a certain time. So the requirement is in the rules. Can we say that? You think that's accurate?
Yeah. What I'd say is accurate is there's momentum behind this from many, many different corners, and that the FAA will be moving forward with rulemaking.
So do you see any way this will never happen?
No.
Okay. That's okay. I think that's probably a safe bet. So what we'll do is keep an eye here. When that NPRM drops, we're going to make sure that people get the knowledge out and when it gets to that point, it was as with any NPRM, when you take the time to go ahead and leave your comments, do it in a way that is intelligent sounding, not mean. And state your facts and state your reasons why you do or don't like it. Because even if you don't like it, say something. If you do like it, say something. Because that's the whole point of an NPRM. So keep an eye open for it. Keep your ear open for it. If you're involved at all in any of the forums, if you watch AstroNU podcast, you'll find out about it. I think we got quite a bit of information out there, and a lot of information hopefully fixed.
Yeah.
Because there is an awful lot of information out there, misinformation out there. And it's not necessarily malicious. It's just people don't understand what this is, and not everybody's going to like it. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. As soon as you do regulations about anything, people are not going to like it. And that's just how it is. But I want to thank you very much for coming on, Astro Neil. I want to thank you very much for your input on the ARC. It was very valuable as the 107 representative there, although not officially. Or was it? Were you officially the 107 representative, or that's just
there?
How
there, there was no there was official no 107 representative.
Okay. But, all right, yeah. That's okay though, because you were there, and you have a good voice. You know what you're talking about. You're well respected in the industry, and so we appreciate you taking the time. And thanks again. If you guys would like to leave a review, do so below. Like us on Facebook, on Twitter, on whatever you want. Subscribe to us, and you'll get all the updates you're gonna whenever something comes up. So thank you very much. And you guys have a great day.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.